Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 20, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. It seems very difficult to love someone for 24 hours a day. Why does it happen so? Should love be a continuous process? And at which stage can love become devotion? Love is not an act. You don't do it. If you do it, it is not love. No doing is involved in love. It is a state of being, not of act. No one can do anything continuously for 24 hours. If you are doing love, then of course, you cannot do it for 24 hours. With any act, you will get tired. With any act, you will get bored. And then, after any act, you have to relax. So if you are doing love, you will have to relax into hate. Because you can relax only to the opposite. That's why our love goes on, always mixed with hatred. You love this moment and the next moment you hate the same person. The same person becomes the object of both love and hate. That's the conflict of lovers. Because your love is an act, that's why this misery. So the first thing to be understood is, love is not an act. You cannot do it. You can be in love, but you cannot do love. Doing is absurd. But other things are also implied. It is not an effort. Because if it is an effort, you will get tired. It is an state of mind. And think in terms of relationship. Think in terms of states of mind. You are in love. This is a state of mind. This state of mind may be focused on one person or may be unfocused on the whole. When it is focused on one person, it is known as love. When it becomes unfocused, it becomes prayer. Then you just are in love, not with someone, but just in love, as you are breathing. If breathing is an effort, you will be tired of it, and you will have to relax, and then you will die. If it is an effort, then sometimes you may forget to do it, and then you will die. Love is just like breathing. It is a higher plane breathing. If you don't breathe, your body will die. If you are not in love, your spirit cannot be born. So take love as breathing of the soul. When you are in love, your soul becomes vital, alive, just like breathing. But think in this way, if I say to you, only breathe when you are near me and don't breathe anywhere else, then you will die. And the next time you will be near me, you will be just dead. And then you will not be able even to breathe near me. That has happened with love. Vipajis. The love objects are purchased. And then the lover says, don't love anybody else. Only love me. Then the love is atrophied. And then the lover cannot love. It becomes impossible. It doesn't mean that you have to love everyone. But you have to be in a loving state of mind. Just like breathing. Even if your enemy is there, you will breathe. That is the meaning of Jesus saying that you will love your enemies. It has been a problem for Christianity how to understand this saying, love your enemies. It seems contradictory. But if loving is not an act, but just a state of mind, then there is no question of enemy or friend. You are in love. Look at it from the other side. There are persons who are continuously in hate. And whenever they try to sow love, they have to do much effort. Their love is an effort because their continuous state of mind is a hate. That's why effort is needed. There are persons who are continuously sad. Then their laughter is an effort. They have to fight against themselves. Then their laughter becomes just a painted laugh. Just false. Imposed. Put together. Not coming from deep within. Just arranged. No spontaneity in it. Just artificial. There are persons who are continuously in anger. Not angry at something or someone, just angry. Then love becomes an effort. On the contrary, if love is your state of mind, anger will be an effort. You can do it, but you cannot be angry. Then you will have to create it artificially. It will be false. If a Buddha tries to be angry, much effort will be needed. And then too it will be false. And only those who don't know him can be deceived. Those who know him, they know that anger is false. Just painted. Created. It is not coming from within. That is impossible. A Buddha, a Jesus cannot hate. Then effort is needed. If he tries to sow hatred, then he will have to do it. You need not any effort to be hateful. But you need effort to be loving. Change the state of mind. How to change the state of mind? How to be loving? And it is not a question of time, how to be loving for 24 hours. This is absurd. This question is absurd. This is not a question of time. If you can be loving in one moment, that's enough. Because you never have two moments together. Only one moment is given. When the one is the last, the second is given. You have only one moment always with you. If you know how to be loving in one single moment, you know the secret. You need not think about 24 hours of the whole life. Only a single moment of love, you know how to fill that moment with love. Then the second moment will be given to you. You can fill that second moment also with love. So remember, it is not a question of time. It is a question only of a single moment. And a single moment is not part of time. A single moment is not a process. A single moment is just now. Once you know how to enter this single moment with love, you have entered eternity. Time is no more. A Buddha lives in the now. You live in time. Time means thinking of the past, thinking of the future. And while you are thinking of the past and of the future, the present is lost. You are engaged with the future and the past, and the present is being lost. And the present is the only existence. The past is no more, and the future has yet to be. They both are not. They are non-existential. This very moment, this single atomic moment, is the only existence. Here and now, if you know how to be loving, you know the secret. And you will never be given two moments together, so you need not bother about time. A single moment, always. And always in the shape of now. Remember, there are really not two types of nows. This single moment is the same. It doesn't differ in any way from the moment that has gone before it. And it doesn't differ in any way from the moment that is to follow it. This atomic now is always the same. That's what Ekahaj says, that it is not that time passes, rather time remains the same, we go on passing. Pure time remains the same. We go on passing. So don't think of 24 hours. And then you need not think of the present moment. One thing more. Thinking needs time. Living doesn't need time. You cannot think in this very moment. In this very moment, if you want to be, you will have to cease thinking. Because thinking is basically either concerned with the past or with the future. What can you think of the present? The moment you think, it has become past. A flower is there. You say, this is a beautiful flower. This same is now no more in the present. It has become past. When you come to grasp something, in thinking, it has become past. In the present, you can be, but you cannot think. You can be with the flowers, but you cannot think. Thinking needs time. So in another way, thinking is time. If you don't think, there is no time. That's why in meditation, you feel a timelessness. That's why in love, you feel a timelessness. Love is not a thinking. It is cessation of thoughts. You are. When you are with your beloved, you are not thinking about love. You are not thinking about the beloved. You are not thinking at all. And if you are thinking, then you are not with your beloved. You are somewhere else. Thinking means absence from the now. You are not there. That's why those who are too much obsessed with thinking cannot love. Because even when they are there, even if you reach to the original divine source, even if you meet God, you will go on thinking about Him and you will miss Him completely. Because about and about and about, you can go on thinking, but it is never the fact. A love moment is a timeless moment. So there is no question of thinking how to love 24 hours. You never think how to live 24 hours, how to be alive 24 hours. Either you are alive or you are not. So the basic thing is to be understood, not time but now, how to be here and now in a state of love. Why is hate? When you feel hatred, go to the causes. Only then love can flower. When you feel hatred, when you feel that your existence is in your life is in danger. When you feel your existence can be annihilated, suddenly hate surges in you. When you feel that you can be destroyed, you start destroying others. That's a safety measure, just a part of the struggle of survival. Whenever you feel that your existence is in danger, you are filled with hatred. So unless you come to feel that your existence cannot be in danger, it is impossible to annihilate you. You cannot be filled with love. A Jesus can be in love because he knows something which is deathless. You cannot be in love because you know only that which belongs to death. And every moment death is there. Every moment you are afraid. How can you love when you are afraid? Love cannot exist with fear. And fear is there. So you can only create a make-believe that you love. And your love is really nothing but, again, a safety measure. You love so that you may not fear. So whenever you believe that you are in love, you are less afraid.
For the moment, you can forget death. An illusion is created in which you can feel you are accepted by existence. You are not denied, rejected. That's why so much need of love and being loved. Whenever you are being loved by someone, you create around you an illusion that you are needed by existence, at least someone, by someone you are needed. You are not just futile. You are not just accidental. You are needed somewhere. Without you, existence will lack something. That gives you a feeling of well-being. You feel a purpose, a destiny, a meaning, a work. When you are not loved by anyone, you feel rejected. You feel denied. You feel meaningless. Then there is no purpose, no destiny. If no one loves you and you die, there will be no feeling of any absence. You will not be felt that you are no more. No one will feel that you were and now you are no more. Love gives you this feeling. That's why in love one becomes or feels less afraid. Whenever love is not there, you become more fearful. And in fear, as a protection, you become hateful. Hate is a protection. You are afraid of being destroyed. You become destructive. When you feel that you are accepted, welcome, not an uninvited guest, invited, welcome, waited for, received, and that existence is happy that you are. The one who loves you becomes the representative of all existence. But this love is basically fear-based. You are protecting against fear, against death, against the inhuman indifference of existence. Really, existence is indifferent, on the surface at least. The sun, the sea, the stars, the earth, they are totally indifferent to you. No one is worried about you. And it is apparently clear that you are not needed. Without you, everything will be as good as it is with you. Nothing will be lost. Look at existence. Superficially, no one, nothing cares about you. They may not be even aware. The stars are not aware of you. Even the earth you call your mother is not aware of you. And when you die, the earth will not be sad. Nothing would have changed. Things will be as they are and as they always have been. With you or without you, there is no difference. You feel just an accident. You were not needed. Uninvited you have come. Just a chance product. This gives fear. This is what Kierkegaard calls anguish. A subtle, continuous fear. You are not needed. When someone loves you, you feel a different dimension has come into existence. Now, at least one person will be there who will weep, will feel sorry, will be sad. There will be tears. You were needed. At least there will be one person who will always feel your absence if you are not. At least for one you have become a destiny, a purpose. That's why so much need of love, and if you are not loved, you are uprooted. But this love is not the love I am talking about. This is the relationship and a mutual creation of illusion. A mutual illusion. I need you, you need me. I give you this illusion that without you, my purpose, my meaning, my life will be lost. You give me this illusion that without you, everything will be lost. So we both are mutually helping each other to be in illusion. And we are creating one separate private existence in which we become meaningful. In which the whole indifference of this vast space is forgotten. Two lovers live in each other. They have created a private world. That's why love needs so much privacy. Because if you are not in privacy, the world goes on impinging upon you. It goes on telling you that whatsoever you are doing is just a dream. And this is a mutual illusion. Love needs privacy because then the whole world is forgotten. Only two lovers exist. And the indifference, the total indifference of existence is forgotten. You feel loved, welcomed. Without you, nothing will be the same. At least in this private world, nothing will be the same without you. Life is meaningful. I am not talking about this love. This is really illusory. It is a cultivated illusion. And man is so weak, he cannot live without this illusion. Those who can live without this illusion, a Buddha can live without this illusion. Then he will not create. But when it becomes possible to live illusionlessly, to live without illusion, a second, a different dimension of love. Not that one needs you, but coming to understand, to realize that you are not different from this existence, which looks different, indifferent. You are part of it. Organically one with it. And if the tree is flowering there, it is not separate from you. You have flowered in the tree, and the tree has become conscious in you. Unless you know that the sea and sand and the stars, they are one with you. And you are not an island. You are organically one with this universe. And the whole universe is within you, and the whole of you is in the universe. Unless you come to know it and feel it and realize it, you will not get that love which is a state of mind. Then you need not create a private illusion that someone loves you. Then there is meaning. And if no one loves you, meaning is lost. Then you are not afraid at all, because even death will not annihilate you. It may annihilate the form. It may annihilate the body. It cannot annihilate you, because you are existence. This is what happens in meditation. This is what, for what meditation is meant, to be a path opening. Existence and me are one. Then you are welcome. And there is no fear and there is no death. Then love flows from you. Then love is not an effort. You cannot do but love. Then it is like breathing. Deep inside you breathe love. In and out you breathe love. This love grows into devotion. Then ultimately you forget even, just as you forget your breathing. When you remember your breathing, have you observed when something goes wrong? When you feel any difficulty, then you know that you have been breathing. Otherwise, there is no need even to be aware of it. And if you are aware of your breathing, that shows that something is wrong with your breathing process. No need of being aware of breathing process. Silently it goes on. So when you are aware of your love, the love that is a state of mind, that means still something is wrong. By and by, even that awareness is lost. Simply you breathe in and out love. You have forgotten everything. Even that you love, then it has become devotion. That is the ultimate peak, the ultimate possibility. You may call it anything. But love can become devotion only when this awareness, even this awareness, is lost, forgotten. It doesn't mean you have become unconscious. It only means the process has become so silent that there is no noise around it. You are not unconscious about it, but you are not conscious also. It has become so natural. It is there, but it creates no disturbance inside. It has become so harmonious. So remember, when I am talking about love, I am not talking about your love. But if you try to understand your love, it will become a step towards growing into a different kind of love. So I am not against your love. I am simply stating the fact that if your love is fear-based, it is just ordinary animal love. And no derogation, no condemnation is implied. Simple fact. Man is afraid. He needs someone who gives him the feeling that he is welcome. Don't be afraid. With one person, you need not be filled with fear. This is good, as far as it goes, this is good. But this is not what Buddha, Jesus call love? They call love a state of mind, not a relationship. So go beyond relationship and by, just be loving. But you will not be capable unless you move into meditation, unless you come to know the deathless within, unless you come to know a deep unity between within and without, unless you feel that you are existence, it will be difficult. So these techniques of meditation are just to help you grow into a state of mind from relationship. And don't think of time at all. Time is irrelevant for love. Second question, most of the techniques which you have discussed have used the body as an instrument. What are the reasons that the body is given so much importance by Tantra? Many basic points to be understood. One, you are your body. Right now, you are just your body and nothing else. You may have notions about soul, atma, etc. But those are simply notions, just ideas. As you are right now, you are just a body. And don't go on deceiving yourself that you are the deathless soul, the immortal atma. Don't go on deceiving yourself. That is just an idea. And that idea is too fear-based. You don't know whether the soul exists or not. You have never penetrated the innermost core where one realizes the deathless. You have heard about it. And you cling to the idea because you are afraid of death. You know death is the real. You go on wishing and believing that something in you must be there which is deathless. This is a wish fulfillment. I'm not saying there is no soul. I'm not saying there is nothing which is deathless. No, I'm not saying that. But as far as you are concerned, you are just the body with the idea that there is a soul which is deathless, just in the mind. And that too you have collected because of fear. That's why the weaker you will become and older, the more you will become a believer, an immortal soul and God. Then you will go to the church and the temple and the mosque. Go to the mosque and the church and the temple. Old men, just on the verge of death, are gathered there. Youth is basically atheistic. Always it has been so. The younger you are, less theistic. The younger you are, more an unbeliever. Why? Because you are still strong and you feel less fear. And still you are ignorant of death. The death is far away somewhere. It happens only to others. It happens only to others, not to you. But the more old you will grow, you will by and by begin to feel now it is going to happen to you. Death comes near and one begins to believe. So all beliefs are fear-based. All beliefs are fear-based. And one who believes because of fear really is deceiving himself. You are the body right now. This is a fact. You don't know anything about the deathless. You know only about the deathful. But the deathless is there. You can know it. Believing won't do. Only knowing can help. You can realize it, but just ideas are of no use unless it becomes a concrete experience. So don't be deceived by ideas, and don't take ideas and beliefs for experiences. That's why Tantra always starts with the body, because that's a fact. You have to travel from the body, because you are in the body. And that too is not good. When I say you are in the body, that too is not good. As far as you are concerned, you are the body, not in the body. You don't know anything which is in the body. You know only the body. That experience of something beyond body is still far away. If you go to metaphysicians, to theologians, they always start with soul. But Tantra is absolutely scientific. It starts from where you are, not from where you can be. That is absurd. You cannot start from where you can be. You can start only from where you are. Secondly, Tantra has no condemnation about the body. Tantra is total acceptability of things as they are. Christian theology and other religions also are condemnatory about the body, against the body. A dualism, a dichotomy, that you are two, and body is the enemy, the evil. Fight with it. This duality is basically wrong. And this duality will divide your mind in two and will create a split personality. Religions have helped human mind to be schizophrenic. Any division will divide you deep, and you will become two, or you will become many. And everyone is a crowd of many divisions with no organic unity and with no center. You are not individuals as far as the meaning of the word is concerned. The word means indivisible. Individual means indivisible. But you are just divided into many things. Not only your mind is body, is divided, your soul and body is divided. The nonsense has gone so deep that even the body is divided. The lower body is evil and the upper body is good. It's stupid, but it is there. Even you yourself cannot feel at ease with your lower body. Some uneasiness creeps in. Division and division and division. Tantra everything. Whatsoever is accepted wholeheartedly. That's why Tantra could accept sex totally. For 5,000 years, Tantra is the only tradition which accepts sex totally, the only all over the world. Why? Because sex is the point where you are, and any movement is going to be from the point you are. You are at the sex center, your energy is at the sex center, and from that point it has to move up or beyond. If you reject the center itself, then you can go on deceiving you are moving. You cannot move. You have rejected the only point from where movement was possible. So Tantra accepts body, accepts sex, accepts everything. And Tantra says, wisdom accepts everything and transforms it. Only ignorance rejects. Only ignorance rejects. Wisdom accepts everything. Even a poison can become a medicine, but through wisdom. So body can become a vehicle to that which is beyond body. And sex energy can become a spiritual force. And remember, when you ask, what are the reasons that the body is given so much importance in Tantra? Why do you ask? Why? You are born as a body. You live as a body. You become ill as a body. You are treated, given medicine, helped, made whole and healthy as a body. You become young as a body, you will become old as a body, you will die as a body. Your whole life is body-centered, around the body. You will love someone, you will make love to someone, and you will create other bodies, you will reproduce other bodies. What are you doing the whole life? Preserving yourself. What are you preserving? By food, by water, by shelter, the body is preserved. What are you doing? Reproducing children, the body is produced. The whole life, 99.9, is bodily. You can go beyond, but that journey has to be through the body, by the body, and you have to use the body. But why, you ask? Because body is just the outer thing. Deep down, body is a symbol of sex. So those traditions who are against sex, they will be against body. Those traditions who are not against the sex can only be friendly towards the body. Tantra is absolutely friendly. And Tantra says that the body is sacred, holy, for Tantra to condemn body is sacrilege. To say that body is impure, or to say body is sin, for Tantra is nonsense and a very poisonous teaching. Tantra accepts body. Not only accepts, but says body is holy, pure, innocent. You can use it. And you can make it a vehicle, a medium to go beyond it. And it helps even going beyond. But if you start fighting with it, you are lost. If you start fighting with it, you will become more and more diseased. And if you go on fighting with it, you will miss an opportunity. Fighting is negative. Tantra is positive transformation. Don't fight with it, there is no need. It is as if you are sitting in a car and you start fighting with the car. So you cannot move. Because you are fighting with a vehicle which has to be used, not fought. And you will destroy the vehicle by your fight. And then it will be more and more difficult to move. Body is a beautiful vehicle. Very mysterious. Very complex. Use it. Don't fight with it. Help it. The moment you go against it, you are going against yourself. It is as if a man wants to reach somewhere and fights it with his own legs, cuts them. Tantra says, know the body and know the secrets of it, know the energies of it. And know how those energies can be transformed, can be moved and turned into different dimensions. For example, sex, which is the basic energy in the body. Ordinarily, sex energy is just used for reproduction. One body creates another body and it goes on. The biological utility of sex energy is only reproduction. But that is only one of the uses and the lowest. No condemnation is implied. The lowest. The same energy can do other creative acts also. Reproduction is a basic creative act. You create something. That's why a woman feels a subtle well-being when she becomes a mother. She has created something. And psychologists say, because men cannot reproduce like a woman, man cannot become a mother. He feels a certain unease, and to destroy that unease or to overcome it, he goes on creating other things. He will paint, he will do something in which he becomes a creator, in which he becomes a mother. That is one of the reasons why women are less creative and man more creative. Because they have a natural dimension to be creative. They can become mothers. And they can have a fulfillment, an easy fulfillment. A deep biological creativity is felt. But man lacks that and feels somewhere imbalanced. He wants to create, he will substitute, he will paint, he will sing, he will dance, he will do something in which he also becomes a mother. Sex energy, Psychologists say now, and Tantra has always been saying that, is always the source of all creation. So it happens, if a painter is really deep in his creation, he may forget sex completely. If a poet is so involved with his poetry, he will forget sex completely. He need not force any brahmacharya, any celibacy upon him. Only monks, non-creative monks, living in monasteries need to force brahmacharya. Because if you are creative, the same energy which moves through sex moves into creation. You can forget it completely. And no need to make any effort to forget it, because that is impossible. You cannot make any effort to forget anything, because the very effort will make it remember again and again. That is futile, self-suicidal. You cannot try to forget anything. That's why those who force themselves to be brahmacharis, they become simply cerebral sex perverts. Then in the mind, the whole thing goes in the mind, not in the body, in the mind. And that is worse, because then their mind becomes totally mad. Any creativity will help, and sex will disappear. Tantra says, if you move in meditation, sex will disappear completely, can disappear completely. The whole energy is being absorbed at higher centers, and your body has many centers. Sex is the lowest center, and man exists at the lowest center. The more energy moves higher, higher centers begin to flower. When the same energy comes at heart, then it becomes love. When the same energy comes higher still, new dimensions and new experiences begin to flower. And when the same energy is at the highest, the last peak in your body, which Tantra says Sahasrar, the last chakra in the head. Sex is the lowest chakra and Sahasrar are the highest. And between these two, the sex energy moves. It can be released from the sex center. When it is released from the sex center, you begin to be a cause to reproduce someone else. When the same energy is being released from the Sahasrara, from the head into the cosmos, you give a new birth to yourself. It is also reproductive, but not biologically, then it is spiritually reproductive. Then you are reborn. So in India, we used to call such a person twice born, dwij. Now he has given himself a new birth. The same energy moves. Tantra has no condemnation, only secret techniques how to transform. That's why Tantra talks too much about body. It is needed. The body has to be understood. And you can start only from where you are. question. You said that love can make you free. But ordinarily we see that love becomes attachment, and instead of freeing us, makes us more bound. So tell us something about attachment and freedom. Love becomes attachment because there is no love. You are just playing, deceiving yourself. The attachment is the reality. The love is just a foreplay. So whenever you fall in love, sooner or later you discover you have become a slave. And then the whole misery begins. What is the mechanism and why it happens? Just a few days before, one man came to me. And he was feeling very guilty. He said, I love the woman. I loved her much. But the day she died, I was weeping, crying. And suddenly I became aware of a certain freedom within, as if some burden has left me. And I felt a deep breath as if I had become free. The moment he became aware of the second layer of his feeling, outwardly he was weeping and crying and saying, I cannot live without her. No, it will be impossible. Either death, either life will be just like death. And deep down he said, I became aware that I am feeling very good. That now I am free. A third layer began to feel guilt. That what you are doing? And the dead body was lying there just before me, he said to me. And I felt very much guilty. He told me, help me. What has happened to my mind? Have I betrayed her so soon? Nothing. No one has betrayed. But when love becomes attachment, it becomes a burden, a bondage. But why love becomes an attachment? The first thing to be understood is, if love becomes attachment, you were just in an illusion that it was love. You were just playing with yourself and thinking that this is love. Really, you were in need of attachment. And if you go more deep, you were in need of becoming a slave. There is a subtle fear of freedom. And everyone wants to be a slave. Everyone, of course, talks about freedom. But no one has the courage to be really free. Because when you are really free, you are alone. If you have the courage to be alone, then only you can be free. But no one is courageous enough to be alone. You need someone. Why you need someone? You are afraid of your own loneliness. You become bored with yourself. And when you are lonely, nothing seems meaningful. With someone you are occupied, and you create artificial meanings around you. You cannot live for yourself, so you start to live for someone else. And the same is the case with the someone else also. He or she cannot live alone, so she is in search to find someone. Two persons who are afraid of their loneliness come together and they start a play of love. But deep down they are searching attachment, commitment, bondage. So sooner or later, whatsoever you desire happens. This is one of the most unfortunate things in this world. Whatsoever you desire comes to happen. You will get it sooner or later. And the foreplay will disappear. When its function is done, it will disappear. When you have become a wife and husband, slaves to each other, when the marriage has happened, love will disappear. Because love was just an illusion in which two persons can become slaves to each other. Directly, you cannot ask slavery. That is too much humiliating. And directly, you cannot say to someone that become my slave. He will revolt. And you cannot say and pray that I want to become a slave of you. So, you say, I cannot live without you. But the meaning is there, the same. And when the real desire is fulfilled, love disappears. Then you feel bondage, slavery. And then you start struggling how to become free. Remember this, one of the paradoxes of the mind. Whatsoever you get, you will get bored. And whatsoever you have not got, you will long for it. When you are alone, you will long for some slavery, some bondage. When you are in the bondage, you will start longing for freedom. So really only slaves long for freedom. And free people try to be, again, how to be slaves. And mind goes on like a pendulum, moving from one extreme to another. Love doesn't become attachment. Attachment was the need. Love was just a bait. You were in search of the fish named attachment. Love was just a bait to catch the fish. When the fish is caught, the bait is thrown. Remember this. And whenever you are doing something, go deep within you to find out the basic cause. If there is real love, it will never become attachment. Why? And what is the mechanism how it becomes attachment? The moment you say to your lover, "Our beloved," that love only me, you have started possession. And the moment you possess someone, you have insulted him deeply, because you have made a thing. When I possess you, you are not a person then, just one more item in my furniture, a thing. Then I use you. And you are my thing, my possession, so I won't allow anyone else to use you. in bargain, I am possessed by you and you make me a thing, and this is a bargain that now no one can use you. Both feel bound and a slave. I make a slave of you, then you in return make a slave of me. And then the struggle starts. I want to be a free person, and still I want you to be possessed by me. And you want to retain your freedom, and still possess me. This is the struggle. If I possess you, I will be possessed by you. If I don't want to be possessed by you, I should not possess you. Possession should not come in between. We must remain individuals, and we must move as independent, free consciousnesses. We can come together, we can merge into each other, but no one possesses. Then there is no bondage. And then there is no attachment. Attachment is one of the most ugliest things. And when I say ugliest, I don't mean only religiously. I mean aesthetically also. When you are attached, you have lost your loneliness, your aloneness. You have lost everything. Just to feel good that someone needs you and someone is with you, you have lost everything. You have lost the self. But the trick is that you try to be independent and you make others the possession. And the other is doing the same. So don't possess if you don't want to be possessed. Jesus says somewhere, judge ye not, so that ye should not be judged. The same, possess not, so that ye should not be possessed. Don't make anyone a slave, otherwise you will become a slave. Masters, so-called masters, are always slaves of their own slaves. You cannot become a master without becoming a slave. That is impossible. You can only be a master when no one is a slave to you. This seems paradoxical, because when I say you can only be a master when no one is a slave to you, you will say, then what is the mastery? How am I master when no one is a slave to me? But I say only then you are a master. No one is a slave to you, and no one will try to make a slave of you. To love freedom, to try to be free, means basically you have come to a deep understanding of yourself. And now you know you are enough unto yourself. You can share with someone, but you are not dependent. I can share myself with someone. I can share my love. I can share my happiness. I can share my bliss, my silence, someone. But that is a sharing. No dependence. If no one is there, I will be as happy, as blissful. If someone is there, it is good and I can share. When you realize your inner consciousness, your center, only then love will not become an attachment. If you don't know your inner center, love will become an attachment. If you know your inner center, love will become devotion. You must be first there to love. You are not. Buddha was passing from a village. One young man came to him and he said, "Teach me something. How can I serve others?" Buddha laughed at him. And Buddha said to him, "First, be. Forget others. First yourself be, and then everything will follow. Right now you are not. When you say, 'I love someone,' and it becomes attachment, you are saying you are not. So whatsoever you do goes wrong, because the doer is absent. The inner point of awareness is not there. So whatsoever you do goes wrong. First be, and then you can share your being, and that sharing will be love. Before that, whatsoever you do will become an attachment. And lastly, if you struggle against attachment, you have taken a wrong turn. You can struggle. So many monks, bhikkhus, sannyasins doing that. They feel that they are attached to their house, to their property, to their wife, to their children. And they feel caged, imprisoned. They escape. They leave their home, they leave their wife, they leave their children and possessions, and become beggars and escape to a forest, to a loneliness. But go and see and observe them. They will become attached to their new surroundings. I was visiting a friend, and he was a recluse, living under a tree in a deep forest. But there were other ascetics also. So one day it happened, I was staying with one recluse under his tree. One day it happened, a new seeker came, and my friend was absent. He has gone to the river to take a bath. Under his tree, the new sannyasi started meditating. The man came back from the river. He pushed that man away from the tree and said, "This is my tree. You find out something else, somewhere else. No one can sit under my tree." And this man has left his house, his wife, his children. Now the tree has become the position. You cannot meditate under his tree. You cannot escape so easily from attachment. It will take new form, new shape. You will be disabled, it will be there. So don't fight with attachment. Just try to understand it, why it is there. And then know the deep cause, because you are not, so this attachment is there. You are so self. Inside you, your own self is so much absent that you try with anything to cling, to feel safe. You are not rooted, so you try to make anything your roots. When you are rooted in yourself, when you know who you are, what is this being which is in you? And what is this consciousness which is in you? you will not cling to anyone. That doesn't mean you will not love. Really, then only you can love. Because then a sharing is possible. And with no condition, with no conditions, with no expectations. You simply share because you have abundantly. Because you have so much, it is overflowing. This overflowing of yourself is love. And when this overflowing becomes a flood, and by your overflowing the whole universe is filled, your love touches the stars, and in your love the earth feels good, and in your love the whole universe is bathed. It is devotion. Enough for today.